Should we crack on?
Yeah.
I was going to check which number is this. 63.
God, really?
Yeah, and the significance of that is, I think this is the first ever one that we did was after that Netherlands friendly when we were pre-World Cup fodder,
yeah.
And it's taken us 62 podcasts to return to pre-World Cup fodder, was how I was going to...
Yeah, that's definitely a good intro.
So, there we go. Okay,
that's
so...
That's good going.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
good
yeah.
going for us.
Yeah, yeah, I expected it to return within about 15. Okay, so, closer welcome to another podcast, Pearl Drive. My name is Russell, and I have the pleasure of the company of...
Gareth.
And via Skype once again.
Leon, good evening. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're okay. Do you want to talk about your tops first? Let's get this out of the way, because you're dying to, guys, I can just tell.
Only because mine is so brand new, it literally arrived in the post today. I have a 1988 Netherlands European Championship shirt, which... as we were discussing before recording, is definitely going to transform my goal-scoring record at five-a-side on a Thursday from now on from hardly any to not many more.
Meager. I can still see the creases, actually. I can vouch for its brand newness. And it's an iconic shirt.
I mean, while we're on it, I also got a 1990-91 season AC Milan, and I couldn't resist getting the number 3 put on the back of that one just because I feel Maldini and I have got quite a lot in common as footballers.
Yeah. As men.
And as men, yeah.
Yeah. But yours wasn't handed to you by somebody famous.
No, it wasn't. I think I'm second place in the kids' stories today. If Leon wants to take us through his.
it wasn't handed to me personally. I've not met Joey Jones, sadly. But he just happened to live next door to one of my best friends here in Innsbruck. Grew up next door to him, and whenever he's back in Wrexham, he taps Joey up for a bit of spare kit from Wrexham training, and I was lucky enough to get a black Adidas Wrexham top from a few years ago when the university, was the shirt sponsor as well, even better, for added extra Welshness. it's pretty special.
If anyone's listening for the first time, they're done after that first 2 minutes, aren't they? We're not picking up any new listeners now. What is this rubbish?
We've lost them.
Self-indulgent twaddle.
I'm in a Rolling Stones Madison Square Gardens 1975 retro tee with the big Rolling Stones mouth and tongue. It's pretty good in its own right, but it wasn't handed to me by, you know, Charlie Watts.
We'll have to do this as a regular feature, I think, for us. Like, what tops are we wearing tonight?
Yeah, it doesn't really work on an audio medium.
I'm not sure I can stand that sort of pressure to get dressed before every podcast either. I mean,
no, it's true.
And I'm planning podcasts already in my head going forward.
But that's the thing. I have to choose which Wales top I'm going to wear for Five Aside on a Thursday night. Yeah. That added pressure
when we start doing that on a Tuesday, so
yeah,
there's only so many days in a week.
Yeah, I will get distracted actually during this, worried about what I'm going to wear in a couple of nights. We're going to talk kits later actually, and because we have to, because the home kit was launched. At the time of recording, the away kit isn't, but there's been a couple of little sort of teasers online today. The goalkeeper kit is out there, which is quite nice actually. So we're going to talk about Panama, we're going to talk about France. And if there's time, also about being invited to exotic foreign invitational tournaments. But again, I don't think that's been confirmed.
I think the invitations happens, isn't it? It's whether we go or not.
Right, okay. So we're playing France Friday night. We're playing Panama then the following Tuesday. Cards on the table. When those were announced, I thought, brilliant fixtures. It's a while since we've had one of the big guns. Coleman himself has complained about how the major sort of nations keep the friendly amongst themselves. So England will play Germany, Italy will play Spain, France will play Germany, they'll play England, and they just keep it to themselves. I don't think we haven't cracked that. We're not at that top table, but it's nice to get one of those fixtures. And then I love an exotic, random friendly. So as soon as Panama was announced, I thought brilliant.
Yeah.
But I've seen a bit of sniffiness about it, and I don't get it. Oh, they're not a draw, and that's why there's only 7,000 or 9,000 tickets sold.
I think that's what's worrying people, isn't it? I mean, it's hard to judge what kind of walk up you get and what kind of last minute ticket sales you get for a midweek game where it's a friendly and people are still a bit disappointed. So it might, you know, not be as bad as that, but I think all of a sudden people are worried about the drop off, the bandwagon, all the rest of it, and maybe Panama are taking the blame for that, which is rather unfair, I think.
Yeah, but Gary Speed made his debut against Costa Rica, and you know, those obscure oppositions. Yeah, I think is what international football's about.
His debut against Trinidad and Tobago when they were going to the World Cup to play England in 2006. Yeah. So I quite like this Panama fixture for sort of nostalgic reasons, in a way. Because, you know, it'd be nice to, if you think Gary Speed made his debut against Costa Rica pre-World Cup warm-up, Bale against Trinidad and Tobago pre-World Cup warm-up, it'd be nice to think maybe someone like Ethan Ampadu would go on to be one of, you know, Wales' greatest ever players, perhaps, and he might make his debut against Panama in a pre-World Cup warm-up. So, yeah, I quite like it. It sort of continues a bit of a line of us playing CONCACAF nations ahead of their going to World Cups. If I lived near or in Cardiff, I would be going for sure. I guess the disappointment is if it's only 9,000 or 10,000 there in a 33,000 seater stadium, there's going to be a lot of empty seats.
Yeah, yeah.
And this, you know, would be a great match to take to Wrexham, I think, you know, but the FAW don't seem to want to do that. We've heard the same kind of excuses for a long, long time about why games can't be taken to Wrexham, which seems a bit bizarre to me, considering that we've played the likes of Serbia in Novi Sad a few years ago, and that looked an awful stadium. I mean, I just watched the game on TV, but the facilities there look bad as well. So, I mean, okay, this is sort of, you know, a bit of a North Wales bias here, but you know, I'd have loved to have seen this game in Wrexham, and I think that's what a disappointment is, that the stadium is too big for this fixture, perhaps.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that, and I think it's the sort of fixture that has been taken there. So we've played like New Zealand and Canada and Liechtenstein, and it was those sorts of fixtures. And I suppose they're not a huge draw in and of themselves as opposition, but I don't know. I just think it's part of international football's sort of rich tapestry. And I tend to find when England are playing Italy or Spain are playing France or something in a friendly, I tend to find my eyes drawn more to the Estonia versus Madagascar fixture taking place on the same night. But maybe that's just me.
That's fair enough. Those big games look good in competitive international football, don't they? But as soon as you're starting a list of friendlies, who cares then? Because neither team's really going to be giving it all. It'll be full of really good players not wanting to get injured. Maybe a couple of dropouts. Then they bring six subs on in the second half. Who cares? You know what I mean? But some of the interesting teams you can look into a bit and find a bit more about. And yeah, it's much more fascinating.
The downside to it, of course, is that it sort of sees us returning to the ranks of pre-World Cup opposition-friendly fodder for other countries. They're going to go to the World Cup and they're now building for this. This is going to be there, which I think is just kind of remarkable. And it counts for some of the caps, because you've done the caps research, haven't you, for you guys? You were that soldier for us all. Absolutely. Thank you very much. When they come to play us, it'll be their 20th game of the calendar year.
It's good going, isn't it?
That's remarkable. That's only in 11 months.
they've got some quite kind of interesting stats. In those sort of last 19 games they've played... Sorry, 20 games they played. 19 are effectively competitive, and nearly half of them are clean sheets. They can defend. You know, they're not. This is not a rubbish team that's come into play. I don't think it's anything we can take for granted. They've only conceded more than one goal in two of those games. One was a battering against America, which didn't seem to do them any harm because they qualified for the World Cup a few days later. So yeah, they're not a bad team. Looking a bit more into the circumstances under which they qualified earlier today, and I hadn't seen it before, but that win against Costa Rica that qualified them is won by a goal that never was. It's nowhere near across the line. I think the USA have been up in arms about that, talking about replaying the game and all sorts, which obviously has not happened. Smacked a little bit of Ireland after Thierry Henry's handball years ago. But it's a brilliant kind of bit of footage of one of the Panama substitutes running over as a Costa Rican player is about to pick up the ball for a throw and just booting it in injury time into the stand as hard as he can, literally out of the guy's hands as he's bending down to pick it up.
Gaz, wasn't it a ball boy?
He had like a fluorescent bib on, so I don't know. I thought it was one of the substitutes, but was it a ball boy? Because that might make more sense, because I kind of wanted the footage to roll on.
to see is he like, is he going to get sent off or is he going to get in trouble? But maybe it was a ball boy. That would make more sense.
It is now. That rings a bell.
Yeah. It's still amazing. You know what I mean? Imagine being that ball boy now. You would be like freedom of Panama City. You've got.
Or another city in Panama.
Yeah. Anyone? The problem might be the sort of pullouts from the squad. My favourite statistic of all is that there's four of their injured players have between them got 422 international caps, which is pretty, pretty impressive.
But if they play 20 games a calendar year, that only takes about 7 seasons to get to that tally.
Chris Gunter's going to get there, isn't he? So,
if Chris Gunter was Panamanian, he'd be on 400 caps.
He would.
Yeah.
Simon Church would be on 200.
I feel we might peak too early with all of this stats work. I also learned as well from Wikipedia that they have two nicknames, one of which is rubbish, right? Because about Panama, we only know really one thing. They have a canal. And so the nickname was Los Canaleros, the canal men. That's rubbish, no. Right? That's when football teams are called like the Reds and it's just the rubbish or the Blues, right? I do like this one though. La Marea Roja, the red tide.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's the red tide versus the red wall. That's got a nice ring to it.
Oh, yeah.
That's good, isn't it? That's good. See, maybe there's a bit more thought gone into this fixture than people have perhaps realised or given the FAW credit for.
And if there isn't, they need you in their marketing department, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm what about hats?
I'm not going to turn that down.
They should become the Hatters or something, no?
The Hatters?
Panama hats?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, of course, yeah. Or cigars. Panama cigars. Do you
Panama
that?
Cigars as well.
Yeah. Well, they're cigarillos. I've no idea.
Okay.
They rank 49th in the world, which, off the back of like a qualification campaign, is kind of hard to know what that actually means and what the actual kind of true strength of them is.
At the moment, we're falling down the rankings. So what that means is that it's an outrage and these teams are falsely high and it's disgusting. Absolutely. And we should be really furious about it. Although, in all seriousness, there's always one or two Central American teams higher in the rankings than you would expect, I guess, because you can rise up quickly by beating a team that was previously a bit better. So if Trinidad's on the slide and Jamaica are in the ascendancy and one beats the other, there's probably quite a lot of ranking points in something like that. And if Panama have had good results against America and Mexico, they're going to fly up those rankings, aren't they? That's fair enough, I suppose.
Absolutely, and I think there's always inherent danger when we talk about these sorts of countries or countries from those sorts of federation areas is patronise them. Having said that, that final round in CONCACAF, there were six teams. All seems fairly strong. I mean, all of them have played in a World Cup recently, except for Panama. The top three go. So you've got like a 50-50 chance of qualifying by right. And then the fourth goes into a playoff. So Honduras are playing off against Australia, which I think is even more sickening for the United States because they finished fifth, a point behind Panama and Honduras. And it's just goal difference that sort of sees Panama qualifying. I think it was all coming down to those final seconds in each of those games. I think something happened in the Honduras game that squeezed the United States out as well.
So Trinidad and Tobago are nowhere then these days.
No, they did finish quite adrift. But I believe, and I learnt this last week when I was with Tim from Fearless in Devotion and my buddy Adam up in Wrexham, which is all in the can, but probably see the light of day another week. Dennis Lawrence is their coach. Obviously has big sort of Wrexham connections.
Yeah.
Quite a highly rated coach as well, because he was at Everton, wasn't he, with Martinez, I think.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he went to Swansea from Wrexham and played under Martinez there. And I think he went from playing to coaching at Swansea for a bit, perhaps, and then went to Everton with Martinez.
They finished quite adrift in that final round.
We talked a bit beforehand. I've looked for some positives. They seem to be kind of solid. They picked up some really good results. But that third qualifying team, you know, from CONCACAF often tend to be not up to much when the tournament comes round. Jamaica weren't. Trinidad and Tobago haven't been. Honduras haven't been. If you look through their squad, it's a few players playing in Major League Soccer, applying the trade in Colombia or Peru or those handful that are in Europe are very much in the lower reaches of European football. It's a team we should beat and should expect to beat, but I don't think it's going to be easy.
And I mean, I suppose there's a probably doing this ass backwards in the sense that the France game is first, but I think, you know, we're not really going to see, are we, the kids, the youngsters, just thrown in against France out in Paris. He's probably going to go with a more usual starting 11. So if he is, then we want to see the likes of Ampadu starting against Panama. Certainly Woodburn's got to start against Panama.
I think so. Well, I wouldn't be surprised to see Woodburn start in France. If you think no Bale and no Howe, there is a kind of spot in the team probably up for grabs unless he plays that extra midfielder, Edwards or King, someone like that. So it'd be nice to see Woodburn in there. I wouldn't want to see, I don't think, our best, sort of our closest to our best team against France, and then literally all our big players are out against Panama and we basically play a second string, the sort of team that played against Northern Ireland the spring before the Euros. You know, I don't think there's much to be gained from that. We win and okay, it probably won't be pretty if we do, or we lose and we think, well, what do we learn from that? A lot of people have been crying out for friendlies.
Yeah.
And we want them therefore to be meaningful. What I'd like to see is in like, well, let's identify these, the ones who are the potential big stars for us. I'd like to see, say, Ampadu, Woodburn, and maybe one other, maybe a Brooks or whoever else in that team. But it'd be nice if those kind of players were playing with Allen and or Ramsey, playing with, you know, maybe Ampadu next to Ashley Williams, rather than as just assuming, well, let's just put in a second string 11. Because it's not international experience then, really, I don't think. Certainly not if the crowd's not that great and they're playing alongside players who are no better than the maybe championship players or and even under 23 players they currently play with. So I'd like to see changes for the Panama game, but maybe just 4 or 5 rather than 11.
What do you think, Leon?
Yeah, I agree with Gaz, really. It's, Rich was talking in the last podcast about how helpful it was for Woodburn to come on with Bale on the pitch, even if Bale wasn't at his best against Ireland and Moldova in those games. It was easier for Woodburn to play with this guy because I think they, you know, the opposition didn't know much about Woodburn, and so they're sort of concentrating on the guy who plays for Real Madrid a bit more. And that helps, and I think it was it was a bit of a struggle for him, a bit more of a struggle for him against Ireland. Well, you know, Ireland were very well organised and they defended well, obviously, but to be that kind of attacking fulcrum without Bale on the field was particularly hard. And obviously, we don't have Bale for these two games, but yeah, I would like to see Brooks play alongside Ramsey, for instance, rather than instead of Ramsey. I've not seen much of Brooks, but from what I have seen, he looked quite versatile anyway, and he's not someone who has to come in and necessarily play as that kind of tip of the diamond midfielder. It would help these kids, and they are, looking at Ampadu and Woodburn. Particularly, they are still kids to have some of our more experienced players around them. Yeah, and with Ampadu, yeah, it'd be good to see him. Maybe I don't know if he's more of a defensive midfielder or a centre back, but yeah, it would be nice to see him alongside Ashley Williams and you know, let him settle in alongside some experienced players. I think that'll really help him,
especially if. You know, if, as it seems, the case, the way Coleman's been speaking, that we're going to have one more campaign out of Ashley Williams, all the more reason for him to, well, as much as he needs to, put to bed the kind of nonsense after the Ireland game. You know, he can come and play in front of the home fans. He can kind of hopefully put in a good performance. He can have an important role in sort of bringing on someone like Ampadu. I think it'd be good for him and good for us going forward. I don't think we should underestimate the potential of these pair of games to become quite significant in a negative way if we go about them the wrong way and if things fall apart. If we get a sound beating in France, which puts off anyone who was umming and ahhing about the Panama game, we could be playing in front of a small crowd, a second string 11, get a kind of poor result, and all of a sudden we've got 10 more months for the Welsh public to fall out of love with the international team again, for Coleman to think again about whether he wants to stay or not. You know, I know I'm writing a kind of bleak narrative, you know, based on speculation, but if this doubleheader at a time when we're still got a bit of Ireland hangover, there's no Bale, goes badly, it could have, you know, it could have quite negative implications for us for the next 10 months before we play any competitive football again. So, you know, I'd like to see us take these games seriously and try and get good results and give France a game in Paris. It's a really good opportunity. And to be fair, the way King and Vokes I had interviewed today are talking, it sounds like they're really up for it. I mean, that's going to be really important that we see that in evidence in the games, that that we can put Ireland behind us really quickly.
Yeah, I think also they've talked, haven't they, about how they want Coleman to stay. Well, I think they have to, you know, help him by giving him a performance to say, you know, look, we're, you know, really behind the manager. We, you know, this is what we're capable of doing. You know, stay with us, stay and give it another campaign. If that's what, you know, the players want, then a half-assed performance and a thrashing in Paris isn't going to help Coleman's cause, really.
You're absolutely right, Leon. I'd like to see much more of that than I want to hear them going banging on about it in interviews. Frankly, it's becoming across a little bit almost unprofessional to a point now. The fact that so many players are coming and leaving. Okay, we get that they like Coleman, they want him to stay, but they've also got to be good players for us if he goes, you know? So let's not bang on about it for 3 more months or however long it is before this decision gets made. Get out there and play, and, you know, if someone else comes in afterwards, then fine, you've got to play for them as well. And if, you know, the way Coleman's going to say, I think Leon's right, is if he sees that there's something happening going forward, and the players have got to show that on the pitch, not talking in interviews. Sorry, I made that sound more kind of negative and critical than I meant to, but I think you get the point.
It's what you're here for. Following on from that, I think the dropouts that they've been, they seem genuine. I've seen a couple of little, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, I don't know, or it's a bit sort of gallows humour, but some sort of references on Twitter to low-key friendlies, having not qualified and the dropouts have started and, you know, Bale's not there. And I don't think he was ever really going to be... I think he was going to struggle to be fit if these were playoff games.
I mean, there's never... I can't think of a more obvious scenario where the international set, the FAW, Coleman, Wales, do their bit and say, do you know what? Fair play to Real Madrid. They've been pretty good to us. It's not right for Bale to be kind of forced to fitness for these games. He's not played any football for Real Madrid. He's got an opportunity to have a week there and get fit. That's perfectly reasonable. The other players who are out... I assume Hal Robson-Kahn is genuine. It's not like he's playing a load of football at West Brom. He could probably do with the games. You said earlier, Russ, before recording, Johnny Williams and Hughes were amazed if they are fit. So never mind pulling out with injuries.
Yeah.
And that's in
that the match. That was perhaps the most predictable one, unfortunately, because I do like Johnny Williams, but you just know, like, he's not... Sadly, he's just not a player you can kind of rely on to be fit to play football, and he's never going to be, I don't think. Which is sad, but that's how it is with him.
And that's how international football is. It's not really just about Wales anymore. I mentioned earlier the plethora of experienced Panamanian internationals that are not making the game. France, you know, Lloris, Mendy, Lamar, Kante, Pogba, Bakayoko, Payet, Dembele, none of them are in the squad. You know, if anything, France are struggling with injuries far more than we are. They've caught up. Do you remember Stephen Nzonzi, who played for Stoke and Blackburn?
Yeah.
He's at Sevilla now, but he's in the squad for the first time. He's uncapped. Yeah, they're light in midfield.
And I seem to remember England fancying him, didn't they?
Oh, was he one of those? Yeah. Sort of residency players?
Yeah.
Not that England would sort of ever criticise other countries for doing that. and yet at the same time be more than happy to plunder the talent from other countries. Absolutely. Of course.
Who is in the France squad? Sorry, I don't know if you guys have got it.
Yeah, I think it's...
Griezmann's
in. There's still a lot of kind of quality options up front. They've got Griezmann in, Giroud is in, Mbappe's there. I think that is it. What's his, is it Coman, the guy who plays for Bayern Munich?
Kingsley Coman.
Bayern Munich. Yeah. Yeah.
I think
yeah.
I noticed that he played one of their last qualifiers in central midfield. So he might play. He's one of those I only ever see on like Champions League brief highlights footage, usually when they're beating Celtic like 4-0 or something. So he always looks really good. I don't know if that's borne out by the reality of areas over 90 minutes, but it's still going to be a team full of good players. Matuidi's in, so he'll be solid in midfield, won't he?
Right. Payet, I guess, is in.
Payet's not in, no. He's injured.
No.
No Payet, no Dembele, no Lamar. So yeah, they're missing some kind of attacking players. Martial's back in for the first time in a while.
Right. Is Ribery in the squad?
No.
I don't know what's going on there. Benzema isn't, is he? Because of that whole weird blackmail thing.
Yeah, he's been out long term, isn't he?
The moment you start mentioning Ribery and Benzema, you know it's probably going to get murky, and we need to just add the word allegedly to lots of things.
Do you want to call the lawyers?
Yeah, just to be clear. It's great. I mean, it's you know, it's returning to France. There's a little bit of a sort of a romance there.
Yeah. Can I get a plug for the book in?
Which book's that, Leon?
Because last time we played France was when? And what was the score?
Well, we beat them. It was 1-0. We beat them. And I'm going to say 82, but I might be wrong.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, is it? Is it?
Which 82? City?
It's in Toulouse.
Lose, yeah. That was a pre-World Cup warm-up for them as well, and they had their designs on winning it in Spain in 82. Yeah, it was just before the tournament as well, and Brian Flynn played that day, so it gets a mention, that game, in the book. And I think it was Ian Rush's second goal for Wales that won it, and that was a brilliant French team who won the European Championships 2 years later with Platini as the star player. It'd be nice to beat them again on their home turf, you know.
That was a hell of a French squad as well. I'm very young. I mean, I don't remember that game, but I remember them at the 86 World Cup. I don't remember 84, but I remember the 86 World Cup. And I just a sense that... I remember my father was really rooting for them as well. And I think you then learn about the injustice in 82 against West Germany and the fact that they're European champions. But I suppose some of that the romantic aspect of the game, you know, they were playing the game the right way, all that kind of sort of cliche, but such a talented side. And I think a lot of youngsters would not appreciate quite how good Platini was. One of the most gifted players I've seen. I mean, the whole moral ethical things since he finished playing. I mean, you know, it's gone down a bit in my estimation, clearly. But then your heroes always disappoint you, don't they? That is an impressive result. And I think the reason I know more about that than is probably cool is that it's one of the few goals, Wales goals, that Rush talks about and games that he talks about in his autobiography. Which is good if you're a Liverpool fan, you'd absolutely love it. But he barely talks about Wales after the Italy game. So 88 is it?
88, yeah.
And you think, well, we beat Brazil, we beat West Germany, you scored. After that, it barely gets a mention other than I returned from international duty. Balance is all wrong in that book from a Welsh fan's perspective. And so I just got a little bit kind of sort of bored with it, really. That said, the late 80s, it's Heysel, it's Hillsborough. That's a significant episode, as you'd expect. And so there's an awful lot of focus on that. And I think kind of dropping in we went and played Finland and I scored twice, it just wouldn't have sounded great. But the international bit focuses as much on any of his goals and games he played. It's that one in France.
Yeah, I guess it's not in that book, particular book, but he is quoted, I think, as saying he struggled to remember a better Wales performance than that one in Toulouse. And you would think, to have beaten such a talented French side in their own backyard, it would have had to have been a decent performance. Obviously, I've just kind of seen the minute or so of footage that exists on YouTube. Yeah, a hell of a result, really.
And I think as well, from the book, that game is where he begins to forge a friendship with Platini, which is related to the move to Juventus as well. So there you go. Book reviews as well.
We've done fashion, we've done book reviews.
One selection point I want to get in, I said this off air, and I thought, well, that sounds really harsh, and I'm going to temper it now, right? But we don't need to see Hennessy against Panama, do we?
I want to see Chris Maxwell play for Wales. far worse goalkeepers have played for Wales than Chris Maxwell. So if he finishes his career without a cap, that would be a real shitter for him, because he's a real talent. He seems like a real character. I think he'd relish it. He'd absolutely love playing for Wales. He'd love playing for his country. Saw him in the... He came back to Wrexham on loan a few seasons ago, and we played at Wembley for the first time ever, I'm pretty sure, in the FA Trophy against Grimsby. Because it was, you know, a final, and it was a big game. They played the anthems before the game, and he absolutely... You know, I think he was the only Welsh... born player in the Wrexham team, perhaps, and he absolutely belted out the anthem, and it was great to see. So it would be nice to see him start, actually, because I think he'd be really up for singing the anthem. So it'd be maybe give Maxwell the first half and Danny Ward the second half.
Do you think it's a reasonable kind of position to take, that, you know, Maxwell's first choice championship keeper playing regular football, maybe that Danny Ward is kind of... whether he's put himself in a position, or Liverpool are putting him in a position where he drops down the sort of pecking order a little bit, and, you know, someone who is playing football gets a chance. I don't know whether we're in the business of encouraging players to seek to move elsewhere or get out on loan or whatever, but to a point, you've got to reflect what players are doing at club level. And I think Leon's right. This is a keeper who's been on the up now for a good year or two, or longer than that, and maybe deserves a chance. That's definitely one of the changes we make for the second game, though. I think you're right about Hennessy. We don't need to see him. I would say that I missed the last podcast, and I thought he was a little bit harshly treated in some of the discussion about him in that. I think when I was listening to it, I was thinking, well, hang on, we draw against, was it Moldova or Georgia, if he doesn't make that very late save, and it was a really, really good save. You know, I think other than that kind of one moment in the one game, he was reliable for us again for another campaign. And I think Leon was right to talk about the rubbish goalkeepers that played for Wales.
Yeah.
We forget that at our peril, how good Hennessy has been for us over a long period of time. So I would say he's still solidly number one. But if we're going to play friendlies, yeah, it is time to see someone else, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd happily see Ward play in France, Maxwell play Panama.
Oh, for both?
Yeah, and maybe that's an opportunity to see a little bit more about if Coleman needs to, after what, almost 75, 80 caps, a bit more of his character. How is he as a backup during a camp? But I think we do need to see a couple of them. And I think if Ward is the backup, which I think he obviously is, notwithstanding he obviously played in Bordeaux, and that was a massive, massive occasion for him, and, well, for all of us, but for him as well, he must have been incredibly nervous. Then I think to see, can he handle Paris? Can he handle some of those? Even with all those withdrawals, that's still a really talented French squad. Yeah. Then I think that would be a test for him that I think we need to see him being put through.
Wouldn't disagree with any of that. I think it's, you know, the one position on the pitch where it makes the least difference if in a friendly you kind of play about with a little bit. You know, what we talked earlier to me about Ampadu or Woodburn coming in, you want them to play alongside players and get a feel for playing alongside those quality players. It doesn't really matter so much for a goalkeeper.
Do results matter?
Against France, no. Against Panama, I would say yes. Having said that, you know, if it's a kind of like slightly fluky 2-1 loss against Panama, or they score like a worldie, and you know, their goalkeeper has the game of his life and keeps out several decent efforts, then, you know, I'm not going to lose sleep over it, but you would expect, probably without Bale, without us kind of being focused on playing in a tournament in a few months' time, that France would probably beat us in Paris. I'm expecting that result. But sort of 1-0 or 2-1 loss, if we see a decent performance, then it's not going to be too disheartening. But yeah, you know, like you said, Panama have got some of their best players out, and they're, you know, clearly not one of the top two teams in CONCACAF, are they? We beat Costa Rica in 1990 before they went to the World Cup. We beat Trinidad and Tobago in 2006 before they went to the World Cup. You know, we should still, even as the kind of pre-World Cup warm-up fodder beat these teams, I think. So, yeah, I would be slightly disappointed if they don't get a result against Panama.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with that broadly. Performance more than result in France. Everything we've achieved is still a big deal for a Welsh team to go to one of the big footballing nations like France. I think the players should be up for it. They should be wanting to show they're putting the Ireland game behind them. I think if we have a really poor performance, it's going to impact on confidence and on how to set up is in the same way a poor defeat in even a competitive game might. If we were to chuck on that, you know, a failure to beat Panama, you know, we are quite capable, as I said earlier, of going on a downhill negative trajectory over the next 10 months so that we're starting from scratch almost in the next qualifiers. And I think these two games, when we probably won't have another game, I guess when's the next window, probably in the spring, it's going to be a long few months if we're coming off the back of Ireland and then two poor friendly results. So I think, yeah, it is important we put in performances, and I think it's probably important that we beat Panama, show that we're still a serious football team going into the next round of qualifiers because they're still a way off.
I think actually it would be this March date that seems to be set aside for this China Cup. I'm kind of heartened by the fact that I think, broadly speaking, we're better away from home than we are at home. And France will have probably more of the ball, indeed a lot of the ball. They will be, you know, setting the tempo, setting the pace. That actually, I think, probably plays more into our hands, assuming that we were going in there full strength and it was a competitive game and you had Bale able to play on the break, etc. But we've got that type of player who can do that. So I'm not overly kind of worried about that game, and it is only a friendly, so I don't suppose there's any need to be. I think actually Panama, it's going to be another one of those games where, look, we're going to have a team that we're perhaps expected to beat. We're going to need to break down, and have we got it in us? Because we didn't against Ireland.
Absolutely.
And we've struggled in a couple of other games, albeit we did get past Moldova in the end and we got past Georgia, but we have struggled with those. And I think, you know, that's one of the nagging doubts I've got with Coleman, is that we haven't cracked that nut yet. In Moldova, I thought maybe we've got over this, but I don't think we have. The Ireland game, I think, has kind of set us back a little bit.
Even when we won those three games in a row before the Ireland game, guys used the phrase that I'm not particularly keen on, as you mentioned, but the sort of fine margins, the narrow wins, there's something going for you. What we need, really, is we need to be a team that when it comes to a game that we should win, we've won it by the hour mark. We're 2-0 up and cruising through the last half hour. Panama is the sort of team, by the looks of their defensive record, are going to come and make it hard for us, like Ireland did and like some of those other teams did. Well, let's start. So if we're going to improve our team, it's got to be getting better at dealing with that and being very kind of confident in the profession and the way we win 2-0 and it was never in doubt. We need much more of that, and we're going to need that going into the next campaign if we don't just want another repeat of the last, you know, 2 years.
Year and a half. I've written it down. I hate not using these facts. They're going to be our seventh opposition from CONCACAF. We've rattled off a couple tonight. So Trinidad, I think you said Jamaica, didn't you, Leon? Oh, and Costa Rica. So you said three. We also played Mexico. We've played the USA, and we've played Canada. So there's the sixth. They'll be the seventh, and it'll be our 12th game. But that's not counting, before you pull me up on this, guys, that's not counting two unofficial games against Canada in 1891.
Is that right?
Yeah. So there we go. That's Stats Corner done.
Sorry, 1891?
Yeah, apparently we played them Canada twice in 1891.
Wow.
Unofficial games. I know no more than that. Please don't ask any other kind of clarifying questions. It was off.
We need Phil Stead on this podcast.
Yeah. I found that off Gary's Gary Pritchard's WelshFootballOnline.com site, which is amazing. And just a quick shout out for Canada's font on their badge, and it was on their '86 World Cup shirts. Just one of my all time favourite footballing things. But
not just kit things.
That's for my niche font podcast.
That's a real thing, right?
In 1986, I'm pretty sure Canada had the first Welsh player to play in the World Cup. No, to play in the World Cup since 1958,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, he did.
Do you remember his name?
Yeah, he's from Cardiff. He's called Paul James. And he later developed a crack habit.
Ah, yeah, you wrote about him, didn't you?
It's a brilliant story, and he's written a book about it, and he's had just an absolute car crash of a life, and he you know, take the boy out of Cardiff, but until World Cup. But you can't take Cardiff out the boy. Yeah. He's a really kind of interesting kind of guy, and has had his demons. But I'm, you know, I hope he's doing well. Wherever Paul is, if you're listening, I hope life's worked out for you.
To come back to the next spring, we were going there at some point, weren't we? What do we make of this China tournament?
It's amazing.
Potentially valuable for us and a great opportunity.
I think it's obscure. It ticks all my boxes. It's random. It's obscure.
Bring back the Kirin Cup.
Yeah,
I say.
Yeah, exactly. We've never played China before.
No.
Clearly, we wouldn't have played China before. I'm a little bit disappointed. I'd heard Serbia were in the running, but you've corrected me.
I think it was Czech Republic.
Off air, that it's the Czech Republic. Uruguay are in there.
Yeah.
That ticks a few obscure boxes.
That's brilliant.
And obviously China. If we can drop the Czech Republic for, I don't know, Togo, then that just is brilliant. So there'll be a bunch of games as well, because it's just in a sort of like a...
So it's 19th to the 27th of March. It's a kind of FIFA international window, presumably, which is set aside for two fixtures for most of the European teams. We'll be having to cram three in. I suppose the question marks come around massive trip, isn't it? Players have got to be back. I think I read earlier the next 10 English league fixtures would be 31st of March, so you've got 3-day turnaround from last game of this international tournament, travel back and play your next match. A lot of Premier League clubs are going to look at that, or Real Madrid are going to look at that and think, maybe players need a little bit of a treatment on a minor injury or a knock. And all of a sudden the gloss and the interest goes out if we're taking out a B squad, and a
don't do this to me. Don't blow this. I mean it will happen. I have absolutely no doubt that is how it will go.
I hope otherwise. But I hope Owen Von Williams doesn't rush into international retirement between now and March, because he could well be needed.
Yeah.
You know. If I was Andrew Crofts, I wouldn't have given up all hope.
Lloyd Igrove's probably looking at those and thinking, yeah. Don't get injured.
I mean, there'll be a lot of excitement at Barnsley Football Club generally, won't there, at the prospect of the Welsh squad that might go out to China.
Yeah. Coleman these days, he announces his squad and he just puts Barnsley on standby. I think it's great. And I wrote something the other day about how, and I have said this before, but I kind of like fleshed that out a little bit. And it is hard to stomach, because the game is still raw against Ireland and probably going to hurt a bit more when they play their playoff now against Denmark. And should they get to the World Cup, you know, it's going to feel a bit like that's the place that we should have had. But they are our benchmark. And there was, as I was going back through some of this and trying to kind of put the timeline together, they qualify for Euro 88, they qualify for Italia 90. They missed out on Euro 92, but they were unbeaten in qualifying, so they consider themselves unlucky there. They get to 94 World Cup. By this point, they've begun themselves to get invited to these random competitions. And I think it's an indicator of Football Nation beginning to just figure on the radars of other associations. And I think that's a byproduct of success.
I think it's great. Scotland haven't been invited to play in the China Cup, have they? So...
But they have been invited over the years to these random competitions in America, or you know, they're hosted on a continent or something, which I think is...
Well, I like seeing it in that way. I mean, it's more positive about where we are. I mean, you could be reductive about it and say Gareth Bale's highly marketable in China, I imagine, and maybe that's the attraction. But I suppose that's not enough on its own, is it? If we hadn't made a splash over the last couple of years, then there's no way we'd be going and be invited to that, would we? So,
reigning champions of the China Cup... It was played for the first time last year.
I read earlier the teams that went, and I can't even remember any of them, let alone who won it. No, sorry.
Well, China was one. I mean, you could have got at least one of them.
Yeah. I'm guessing China didn't win it, though.
No, they didn't. It was Chile. Mm. Yeah, Chile beat Iceland in the final. Looked really dull, actually. Lots of 1-0s, draws, penalty shootouts. But Chile beat Iceland 1-0 in the final.
Well, I'd love us to be in a penalty shootout.
Oh, yeah, we've never been in a penalty shootout, have we?
I said that during the Euros. I really wanted a penalty shootout, actually, for that proper sort of tournament experience. I felt like we missed out a little bit.
I fear it's too late now to who are our five penalty takers, right? That's what we need to do with next podcast. Okay, you need to work on this, guys. Penalty shootout, you're kind of like second round, quarter final place beckoning. Who's your five? Maybe even your six or seven, because sometimes you've got to go to those as well.
Is it our five for like a proper tournament, or is that a five for the China Cup? next year.
That's far too hard because Simon Church.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who scored our last penalty. Oh, Ramsey. Ramsey won it in
Serbia. Yeah.
As long as they do their penalties at training sessions at Barnsley, we'll be fine.
Yeah, we're going to have to do that one, all right? Okay, put that one on the back burner. So that's the China Cup done. Okay, new kit.
Dull.
Yeah, I predicted off air, and I made Russ save it for the recording, that he wasn't going to like it. And I would say he's our go-to kit fetishist.
It's just bland. It's just a bit... And you see some of the other Adidas ones that they're bringing out, they're kind of like harking back to old templates. Yeah. So I've seen the Spain kit today, and it's a throwback. And there's that image that's been doing the rounds on the internet of that Adidas white sleeve. And you just think, well, someone's done the work for you. Nobody would accuse you of being lazy or ripping off or anything like that. They've just kind of just dropping heavy hints for weeks and months.
Someone did a Twitter poll, and there were four options varying from very enthusiastic down to not very enthusiastic. I can't remember what they called them. But about 80% of the vote was encompassed in the two middling options, the sort of it's okay and the sort of options.
Yeah.
I think that tells you everything, doesn't it? Not going to be memorable.
But yeah, I think the consensus has just been shrug of the shoulders.
Do you know what, considering Adidas kits were so good in the 80s, we had Adidas what, from like 1980 to 86, I think, 87, before Hummel. All those kits were great. And I think there was quite a lot of excitement when Adidas were making our kits again. And it's just been a bit disappointing, generally, I think. They've just been really tossed off efforts, it seems. Like, you know, even the Euros kit was all right. But there's no kit that Adidas have made for us of late that's one to really fall in love with, is there?
So I like the yellow one against Moldova, but in terms of home kits, I think they're getting actually progressively worse. I just dug up the historical kits website now. The last home kit I really liked was the Umbro one with the yellow stripe. The one yellow stripe down the left.
Oh yeah, it's a great kit.
And then we added green socks to it against Scotland. But the away kit looks like it's got green, and the away kit for that Umbro kit was the white and green halves on the front, wasn't on the back, just for Simon Shakey's benefit. And that is a quality away kit. You know, they can redeem themselves. They can redeem themselves, Adidas, but I'm not confident. Other opinions are available, and at least it consigns that abomination of a grey kit to history once and for all.
Let's please never, ever, ever play in grey ever again.
What's the life cycle of a kit anyway? How long is this one going to last? We'll be in a different kit by the time we've played a couple of qualifiers.
I don't think it's going to be that long. I reckon this will be here for a year, I reckon. And there'll be something else by the time the new campaign comes
on. It'll become our China Cup kit.
Partly because...
That'll be remembered.
China Cup Champions kit, perhaps. Yeah, true, it probably will be, actually. Yeah. I think the last one was worn for longer, because I think, if I'm right, I think Shaky said this to us previously, they were going to drop us, but they didn't. They kind of carried on, what with all of the success and Euros, etc. But we're a bit stumped for a replacement. Stand corrected, but that sort of not long-term planning or seeming to put a huge amount of effort into it would seem to chime with that sort of scenario. So yeah, so there we go. Quick shout out S4C, because they're showing the under-21 games and both the senior games that are coming up, which I think is a fair play. It's a terrific effort, actually. So Friday is a bonanza of football. It's Wales-Bosnia up at Bangor, I'm pretty certain.
Yeah, both the games are at Bangor, I think, aren't they?
Yeah.
It looks like there's going to be some good crowds there, which is great. It'd be great for the under-21s to play in front of, like, it's only a small stadium, obviously, but a full stadium for both those games. Those are big games, actually, and I was going to actually mention those, because I wonder if those games hadn't been on at the same time, we might have seen someone like Harry Wilson in the senior squad. But these games are maybe a chance for him to kind of show what he can do in a Wales shirt, because these are two big games for the under-21s, and he's been in great form for the Liverpool under-23 side this season. Let's hope he can take that on to international level as well.
Yeah, under-23, it's up there with buttons on collars for me, right?
I take the wider point, though. It's an opportunity for him, and I'm sure he's his number one priority. I suppose he's got to be hoping his club career moves on, but he's been surpassed at international level by players he was well ahead of, you know, a year or 18 months ago. Hopefully something that maybe motivate him. You know, it'd be nice to see him have a really big performance and then see where it goes from there. He could do with maybe another goal going out on loan in January.
Well, it does beg the question. The number of players from those top sort of six then, certainly top four Premier League clubs that do go out on loan, you know, the volume of players that goes out, I mean, Chelsea are obviously the biggest sort of offenders, so to speak. It does beg the question, well, why hasn't he had another one? Because I think it's the season before last where he was at Crewe. I think him, there's a parallel there with Ward. You can almost look at them at the minute and their situation is it's almost two careers that they're not wasting. That is harsh. But it's two careers that are the flatlining a bit here. Mm. An international one and a club one.
Yeah. Chuck George Williams into that as well. There's another one that's gone rapidly backwards or into obscurity. We can't really afford to to lose these promising players because there won't always be a Brooks and a Woodburn coming along 6 months later. You know, we need these guys to kick on and do something.
Okay, should we leave it there? Said I can't wait for the two games. I think they're really, really good fixtures. And all credit to the FAW for that. I think the next podcast after this is probably going to be the one with Tim and Adam talking sort of Wrexham and the race course. And it was a shame you couldn't join us for that one, Leon.
Go well.
Yeah, it did. It's the editing is a bit of a headache. Bit of sort of noise and interruptions and stuff, but yeah, no, it's good content wise. It's really great. I was really grateful to them. So just a plug for Tim's sort of online fanzine, really, Fearless in Devotion. It's at a temporary website, but it's going to be getting a kind of a brand new home imminently. And there's a lot of nostalgia for some of the old Wrexham players and getting games at the race course. And it was an interesting kind of sort of point to it where for the generation of Adam and Tim, and it would be the, you know, the same generation for me, the 90s were broadly a really successful decade for Wrexham. I mean, it started pretty grim, admittedly, but I mean, you got that Arsenal Cup win and then under Flynn, as you will know, and, you know, you really should write a book about it, Leon. It's a, you know, really, really good decade for them. But Wales were a bit average, you know, and then it gets even worse and it gets, you know, but they had the club stuff to fall back on, and they sort of said, well, Tim uses this great phrase, he refers to Wrexham doing a 10 stretch in non-league. It's kind of flipped, the national team that's providing a little bit of that success and a sort of a release from the monotony and the disappointment and so on, although it's a decent season to date now, and Tim articulates it better than me as he can as a Wrexham fan. But yeah, no, really, really, really great, and thanks to Scythe Theron for hosting that. So maybe get that out kind of after the games. In France, if you're going, look after yourselves, look after each other, and get around the mic sometime probably next week then to review Ethan Ampadu's debut and Dave Brooks's goal-scoring debut.
So,
cheers, fellas.
Cheers.
Cheers, Oscar. Happy and contented.